Hi, I'm Kylie.
And I'm Elliot.
We're hosts of Bad Dad, Rad Dad, a Snack Labs podcast where we look for better dads one movie at a time. Every week, we talk about the movies we watched, the thoughts and feelings they brought up in us, and the best and worst dads we found in them.
Our weekly movie picks can span decades, genres, languages, and more. Plus, we keep it totally spoiler-free so you can discover movies that you want to watch.
So join us every Thursday on our silly little movie journey to hear about the movies we watched that week.
And the dads they made us wish we had. Because
my dad's dead.
And my dad's a deadbeat.
But as far as we're concerned,
not all dads have to be bad.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, baby.
Hello, my love. How are you?
Ready for another week of podcasting?
I love how you can go from being so frustrated to so present in the flick of an on switch.
It's the name
of the
game. Name of the biz. That's I learned that in theater school. It's called the on and off switch. Man, you know what, though? I got to tell you. I just had this thought very recently, but... So I got Donut. Donut came into my life at really a good time because I needed something to not distract me, but I needed like
something tender to fill your tender.
Yes,
heart.
I needed something to love, mm-hmm. And I needed. I also needed to like put my energy into something that wasn't. Dwelling on heartbreak and hardship. Mm-hmm. And so I got to say, like, it having Donut has been so amazing for that. This is not a plea for anyone to go out there and buy a puppy.
Not advisable.
No, don't do that. It just by happenstance, it all came together at the same time. But it's been such a gift. And the thing that's been so nice is like, it's getting me outside a lot more than I typically would. Do that.
Yeah.
Especially if I'm like low, yeah. I'd be like, I'm just going to stay in bed. But I can't, I got to get up at fucking 2 a.m. and 6 a.m. and you know, like always getting up, taking them out. But that's not my point. My point is that when I'm out and about where we live in the city it's very hustle and bustle. There's a lot of foot traffic, a lot of people out. And it's quite a little neighborhood. It's a very like sweet little neighborhood with a lot of really cool people. And my favorite thing is basically I'm walking. I feel like I'm just walking around providing like just sprinkling joy.
Oh yeah.
All throughout the
it's like
the
having
north
a,
end of Halifax.
A handful of confetti.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a handful of donuts that I'm just throwing out to everyone. And it's very nice. So that is filling me up right now. I'm feeling very grateful for that. But I have made the realization this is the longest This is the longest I've gone
without sex
in a long time without sex. And like any form of sex.
You're not masturbating?
No, you are definitely doing that. but like, I mean, like, you know, like early lockdown, there was still sex, but it wasn't like physical sex. It was right. Like, you know, it was
virtual.
Like, yeah, virtual connection, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This is the longest I've gone without anything like that.
Okay.
And it is.
Are you okay?
I think it's making me real short.
Oh,
I think I'm like, I think I'm cranky about it.
You're not losing height short.
No. I'm still 5'9".
I'm shrinking. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. I know that's
like, no, you fucking crybaby. She's like, shut the fuck up. But I don't know.
It's interesting to think about the longest period of time, you know, like when you, if you, let's say, started having sex in a relationship that lasted for a long time and it was monogamous or whatever, and then maybe you're a bit of a serial monogamist and you go right from one relationship to the next relationship, and so you've pretty much had like consistent sex, to think about the to think about having gone 18 years without it, or however old you were when you started having it, is I like to think about that time. I like to think about it too in terms of like, I wasn't drinking at that time or hadn't been exposed to any drugs or anything like that.
You mean when you're younger?
Yeah, like when you're
when you start.
When you're younger and you just occupy yourself with other activities.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, now as, you know, a sex-having adult, I think the longest I've probably gone is about 3 months.
Oh, man. It hasn't even been a month.
No, yeah.
It's been pretty damn close to a month.
Okay. 30 days.
Yeah.
Not such a long amount of time for a fast of any kind, really.
It's a fucking long time for a fast of coffee. It's a long time for a fast of nicotine.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
true.
It's a long time for a fast of the thing. I'm not saying I'm addicted to sex, because, A, that's quite controversial and whatever. We don't have to go down that road. But I am, it is a, you know, I was having this conversation the other day with somebody, I don't remember who it was, about love languages. Oh, I was talking to Jeff, my agent, our manager.
Cool. Was he familiar with love languages?
No, okay. He wasn't. And it was this really nice conversation about like what they are, and, you know, we were talking about like, you know, what are his love languages like, and what are mine? And, you know, mine are physical touch and words of affirmation.
Mm-hmm.
And
you feel like that's been pretty consistent?
Pretty much my whole life.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like mine might be shifting.
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, you know, it was really interesting. It was when I started dating Leah. One of the things that was never a love language of mine to give was acts of service.
Right.
I'm not a very big acts of service
kind of
guy.
It's funny because it's my number one.
Yeah, I know. I know. And then I started dating Leah, and that was like, I don't even think that was one of her love languages, but it was like, I don't know why, I just had this like deep
compulsion
to like, to serve, you know, like I found myself like making dinner for her, like almost nightly.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, I barely make dinner for my fucking self. Yeah. Like I do acts of service for me.
I don't believe you've ever made me dinner.
I know. It's fucking crazy. Maybe made you pad thai like on our first date or something. But yeah, so like,
I'm pretty sure I introduced you to pad thai, so maybe not.
But is that me shifting my love language? Because I know that typically the love languages that I feel fill me up.
Yeah.
Are the ones that I innately tend to give more than the others.
And I think that's typically how, if anyone's listening to this for the first time, the concept of love languages is that there's about 5 universal ways that humans tend to give or receive love. Yeah. And that generally speaking, we kind of have a top 2 that are the way we prefer to receive love. And then, and also in theory, the is that we tend to match up with folks who have opposite love languages. So the idea is that even though you like to receive love in a certain way, like an act of service, like having dinner made for you, it may not be received by the person you're giving it to as an act of love because they recognize something different.
Yeah.
And again, just for the first timers who are listening or anybody who needs a recap, the love languages are acts of service, gifts, like presents. That's a really hard word to say into the microphone.
Gifts. Is it
gifts
or gifts?
Which, I mean, self-explanatory.
That one's weird to me. Gifts.
I can totally get behind it. I think.
I guess I understand it, but like, if that's your love language, that's gonna become expensive real quick.
It doesn't have to be expensive, you know. And there's some crossover between gifts and acts of service. You know, I picked you this bouquet or whatever. Sure.
You can
find ways that it doesn't have to be expensive.
What are other ways that you can give gifts that aren't financially based?
Okay. Well, let me just get to the first. Let me finish the five and then we can get into that question. But okay. So what do we have? Acts of service, gifts, quality
gifts. Can you not say that word?
I can't. Well, I didn't vocally warm up today, so my gifts. Articulators are low-key, but I find I'm just self-conscious about saying it into the microphone.
Say it again. What's funny is I have the monitors on, you don't,
yeah,
and I'm really hearing it. I'm really hearing the way you're fucking that word up.
Gifts.
You really don't pronounce the T, eh?
Gift.
Gifts.
Gifts. It hurts. It hurts to put those three consonants together, gifts. The F, T, and S.
Everybody at home, all together now. 1, 2, 3, gifts. There we go.
Oh, my God. Quality time is another love language, which is a big one for me as well.
Yeah.
Especially these days when it's so hard to have screen-free time with a human being.
Fuck
that's
me.
One of my...
I know.
That's like basically taken over... Quality time is just, it just means screen free.
Yeah.
Words of affirmation. So just, confirming that you love or someone's beautiful or, you know, whatever. Did I get them all?
And physical touch.
And physical touch, which is, also. What
so there's
exactly
touch,
what like.
Words of affirmation, gifts, acts of service, and quality time.
You got it.
So I was noticing that I was doing a lot more acts of service. Even though that's not my love language, and even though I don't think it was necessarily hers, but still very high up on that list of what I was doing to show my love was physical touch and words of affirmation. Like I very much am constantly when I'm really into someone, I'm like constantly telling them how fucking beautiful they are, and I love saying I love you and. Those things feel really good. And then physical touch is like, that is, if I was to like put it on a graph and like where it would sit on the graph, words of affirmation would be like middle of the graph. Physical touch is like way the fuck up there. Mm-hmm. And whether that's like sex or it doesn't necessarily have to be sex. It could be sex. It could be just fucking cuddling, like legs tangled up. It could be like grooming. You know,
I love
like,
grooming.
I love that you love grooming.
Grooming is, like popping each other's blackheads and,
I love it.
You know, just that kind of
monkey
kind
stuff.
That
gorilla shit. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, all that to say, I haven't had much physical touch.
I'll pick your blackheads later.
Yeah, I would like that. and it really is reminding me of like how I get when I don't have coffee or if I don't have nicotine.
Mm-hmm.
Like I feel, I don't know. I just feel like,
irritable,
not so much irritable, but more so just like, I don't know. I think I'm just sad. I think I'm just like, it's like a sadness. Bummed. I'm bummed. I get bummed when I don't have caffeine.
Right.
I don't really get irritable. I get bummed. I'm like, why am I so fucking slouchy and bummed today? And then I have coffee. And go, oh yeah, that right. Oh, now I feel better. So that's what I'm feeling.
Do you think? Because I know that you've been feeling sad for a little bit.
It's been like a fucking year.
Yeah, but do you think maybe, you know, and before that there was Bigby, and before that. there was the end of your relationship with Becca.
Yeah.
And do you think maybe your system just is a little depressed in general?
Yeah, maybe, 100%. Yeah, maybe 1,000%. There's no doubt about that. But I guess this all really did start with like this bummedness started with the end of my relationship with Becca.
Mm.
You know, like that was a really hard breakup. I haven't gone through many breakups.
Yeah.
That was really hard.
Yeah.
And that relationship had to end. Like mm-hmm. that really could not go any longer. But I was still really sad that it ended. And then from that moment up till now, I've just been in this state where I'm just like, I want love. I want love so bad.
Mm-hmm. Without drama.
Yeah, without drama. And like, I get love from you. And that does fill me up. But I need, you know, our relationship has evolved to a point where our intimacy and our love is much more platonic than it is romantic. And I very much am like this hopeless, romantic, fucking mushy love freak.
Mm-hmm.
And I just haven't had it in so goddamn long. And and I just like, it's fucking wearing on me, man. It's like, which is why it felt so good to have Donut, because
you get that flood
I'm so in love with him. I'm so, yeah. You know, like I was carrying him down. To get him out to pee, I got to fucking, because he can't use stairs. So I got to carry him down the stairs, like this flight of stairs out of the condo. And I was just like walking him down the stairs, just like talking into his ear, being like, I love you so much and I will fucking always take care of you and I love you. I was like crying while walking him to pee. You know, like I don't even know why I started the fucking podcast like this.
Well, it's a really interesting thought and experience that you're having and sort of contemplation that you're having around it. And like you said, you haven't had many breakups.
No.
I think there's also something to the fact that you can see that it sort of started at the end of your relationship with Becca.
Mm.
And I bet if we pushed it even a little bit more, we could find sources of it throughout, because there, you know, your parents were divorcing even before that, and that really bummed you out.
Yeah.
And there's an interesting, I don't know, maybe you don't feel this way, but especially in the wake of your parents' divorce and, you know, watching them deal with their grief about their own relationship ending. It seems to me that there may be a message in there about, you know, like we can stand on this side of things and say, hey, you know, like your dad, for example, is a part of a different generation where they weren't allowed to process their feelings or their emotions, and they stuffed things down and they pretended it wasn't there, and they became, you know, maybe not became the good time guy, but they were more known as like the good time person, you know? And then when it comes down to hard emotional things, there's just sort of an absence there. I'm sort of seeing it as well with some of my older brothers. Mm. And just feeling like they're kind of in that generation as well. And so there may be something, I don't know, to think about in relation to that. Just how can you do this in a healthier way than has been demonstrated to you by the older men in your life, you know, because you're experiencing this, but also there's the feeling, like you've compared it to coffee, you've compared it to nicotine, of it being a sort of a hit. And in that way, a hit is a little bit of an addiction. And I'm not saying that you're like addicted to love, but I've been, you know, reading a little bit more about like 12-step programs and the idea of of not having like a soothing balm to put on the general achiness that it is to like live as a human being, nothing to take the edge off, is kind of, you're in that state right now. You don't have those natural, that dopamine soothing you from the inside out. So how can you sort of take care of yourself in the absence of that? Yeah. And with, because nobody wants to be in a position where they have to, where they're looking around for someone to fill a void, you know? Like, do you know what I mean by that? Like, if you're feeling a bit of a space, an emptiness or a depression or a sadness or a void in the absence of this kind of physical intimacy, how can you cope or make that, put that into perspective so that it isn't just excruciating and you aren't at the mercy of it? I don't have any answers.
I don't
for
know.
You.
Yeah, I don't know either.
But do you,
I think by finding someone that will love me.
Yeah. Okay. But that puts, you know, the solution
in someone that I can love.
Yeah, and we should all have places and people to give and receive love from. And I think, honestly, that's so cliched. But I think if there's any reason or rhyme or purpose to everything we go through as human beings, it could be to learn how to love. Because it's such an act of selflessness to really love. Like, you referred to us as having a platonic love, but the word that also resonates for me about the way I feel about you is like a fierce love. Like, I would throw my body in front of a bullet for you. And I can't say that about everybody that I love. So I don't know what my point is, but I think there's just definitely something to examining what you're feeling and what you perceive as the only solution to that. And then consider,
like, I know it's not the only solution to find somebody else, you know, to like find someone that fits into the puzzle piece that's missing.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's not the only answer, but it doesn't change the fact that, like, that's what I want.
Yeah.
That's all I want.
Yeah.
You know,
it's funny that I've ended up with so many romantics in my life because you, my sister Tara, kids, a lot of the people that are closest to me see themselves as romantics. And I've always had a hard time seeing myself that way.
I still don't even really know what that means. Romantic. English language, a person who thinks a lot about love and does and says things that show strong feelings of love for someone. Oh yeah, that's exactly what I am. Someone who is not realistic or practical. Someone who thinks that things are better or more exciting than they really are. Shit. Yeah, I guess that does.
Is there like a remedy for romantics that you can look up?
Yeah, there's a quiz here. How romantic are you?
Oh no. I wonder if I could get an answer once and for all if I am truly a romantic or not. Because I feel.
Well, do you
want to
do this quiz?
Yeah, sure. Give me a quiz.
All right. Do you ever create a romantic scene like you'd see in the movies? Rose petals on the bed or walkway, candles around the room, etc. A, as often as possible. I should have stock in candle companies. B, I've done my share of romantic scenes. C, rarely or never. Those are just cliches.
Rarely or never.
Okay, I would say B. I've done my share of romantic scenes, but I'm not a fucking weirdo about it. two, do you believe in love at first sight? Yes, I am all about instant love. B, it could be possible for some people of the time. Oh, sorry. Learn how to read, Jer. It could be possible for some people some of the time. Or C, not in real life, only in movies.
I think B.
I say A, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, 100%.
We're leaning towards you being a little bit more romantic than me.
I think we are a little bit. Three, do you daydream about romantic places or ideas? A, one of my favorite things to do. B, I've had my daydreaming moments. C, I am not a daydreamer. I live in the real world.
Okay.
C sounds like a real fucking dick.
Yeah, they're supposed to mix them up. So
no,
you can't
they're not. They're not.
They're very clearly.
It's going to be at the end. Like it's going to be like if you've answered A for most or B for most or C for most. So I should take this down here. I'll write this down so that we can track exactly what we've answered the most of. So Bridie, Jer. So you said
C and then B. I think
you said C and B. Yeah. C, B, and then I said B. A.
Mm-hmm. No, but the third one, the daydreaming, that's tough because I really have to think about, I do a lot of daydreaming.
But do you daydream about romantic places or ideas?
I dream about, no, I don't. I think I'm a B. Just put me a B because I'm definitely not a C.
I too am a B on that one.
Okay.
Yeah, I find myself like daydreaming about like great places for a date. Like stuff
okay,
like that.
That's nice.
Four, do you find yourself emotionally moved by sentimental gestures? A, I am easily moved by sentimental gestures. B, I have my sentimental moments. Or C, I am not sentimental.
Why are you laughing?
I'm just laughing because C is just such a fucking cunt.
I think I'm a B.
Same.
Okay.
B and B.
Sometimes.
Yeah, same.
Sentimental. Sometimes it makes my skin crawl.
Are you into chick flicks, romance novels, still watching shows like The Bachelor in hopes of finding people finding love, even though most of the season's couples have broken up? A, most of my movie, television, book choices involve romance. B, I sometimes seek out romantic stories in shows. C, I prefer action, adventure, crime, pretty much anything but romance.
Yeah, I'm not much of a romance.
I'm going to go with you on that. C.
Okay.
I don't watch
mostly,
any of that shit.
But well, let's say here. Okay, so I got Todd to watch Fried Green Tomatoes for the first time the other night.
Right.
And
it's your favorite movie.
It's my favorite movie. I've seen it, and I don't like exaggerating. So when I tell you I've seen it 30 times, I've seen it at least 30 times.
Wow.
I love that movie so much.
30 times. Wow.
It impacted
I don't think
me.
I've seen a film 30 times.
Right? A lot of people are like, I've seen it 100 times. I'm like, no, you
I've
have
seen
not.
I've seen Alien probably 10 times.
Right.
30, that's a lot. Fuck me.
Did you know that the same side note, because then we went and we watched Thelma and Louise, well, only the first half, and we fell asleep. Did you know it was directed by Ridley Scott? Same director as Alien?
Fried Green Tomatoes?
No, Thelma and Louise.
Oh, no. No, I didn't know that.
Ridley Scott has a...
Oh, he's got a...
Very eclectic...
He's got a wonderful library of... films.
It's unbelievable. Like, yeah. But I couldn't contrast Alien against Thelma and Louise anymore. But anyway,
no.
So that was just a sidebar. Fried Green Tomatoes, watching it again for the millionth time, most of those times were in my teens because that's when I found it. How much it occurred to me. So Todd at one point was like, oh, they're going to fall in love. Or they're in love, the two lead women. And I was like, huh, interesting. And I kept watching, and I've never read the novel. So I was wondering, are they insinuating that these two women are in love with each other? But I think it's just that really fierce, platonic love that's between them.
Yeah.
And you know, I wanted to be both of these women. I was in love with both of these women.
God, Brad
and
Pitt
so,
is so good looking.
But there is something really romantic about that story.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
All right. Do you write poems and love letters to your special someone all the time? Maybe on special occasions, or once in a while, or never?
Maybe on special occasions.
I don't think I ever do. So B and C.
Remember that time I made you a stop motion animation movie?
I was thinking about that the other day and wondering where it is.
I know. I wonder where it is too.
Yeah. It was so sweet.
You sent me a text message back when we started dating called like the story of Bridie and Jeremy.
Mm.
And it was this like text message that just like talked about our love. And
oh, well, you know, I'm going to have to change my answer there to B then.
Yeah.
Because I guess I have done that.
Yeah, and then right. I turned it into a stop motion animation.
Oh, that's so cute. And it was a Sefton Stevens song that
that's
I remember.
That's right.
That was the soundtrack to it. Do you use pet names for your partner? A, so often that I rarely call him or her by his or her real name. B, I have moments of using pet names or terms of endearment. Or C, not my style.
I'm probably an A because it's just same. Habit.
Yeah, I don't.
Babe?
Yeah, babe is like, that comes out so much.
Which my teenage self would be squealing about because I used to think that was the sexiest nickname ever.
Babe. Come on, babe. Babe, go on. Do you enjoy spooning and cuddling? This is fucking easy. A, I will take all the physical affection I can get. B, at convenient and appropriate moments in time. Or C, I am not much of a cuddler or spooner.
A B.
I'm an A for sure. I'm literally a koala bear and my partner is a tree. Have you ever brought your partner breakfast in bed? A, it is something I love doing. B, I have done before and would again. C, maybe a granola bar as he or she is headed at the door, but not in bed.
Yeah, this is a point of contention. All I want is to have coffee delivered to me in bed every morning. That's that's my dream wake up call. And I, for the life of me, cannot communicate that enough
to make it happen.
So,
but is it something that you do?
I do it, but I don't feel romantic about it. I do it because I have to make coffee for myself, so I'll make coffee for my partner.
So I would. So then, B. I have before and would again.
I don't know. I think put C for me on that one. Actually,
C. Okay. Yeah. I'm gonna say I'm gonna say B on that one. Do you plan romantic activities? A, those are some of the best kinds of activities. So yes, this is that Tara is such an A.
Yeah.
B, I mix in romantic activities with other types of activities. C, rarely if ever.
I think I'm a C on that one.
All right. I would say I'm a B. Even though I don't really know what romantic activities are, I definitely think about that kind of, again, like when I'm thinking about dates, I'll think like, oh, maybe we'll like pack a picnic or something.
I would, however, like someone else to plan romantic activities for me to participate
in. Who the fuck wouldn't? That's so nice.
Yeah.
11, do you take initiative in your relationship to be romantic even if your partner does not? Yes, it is a priority for me. B, I will do it if it's been a while. C, no, it's not important or necessary.
I hate that I'm answering a C here.
Wow. I'm a B. It's not always, but sometimes. We're almost there. We've got just a few more.
I'm becoming less romantic as the survey goes on.
Do you keep mementos from experiences with your partner, like concert ticket stubs, wine corks, and sentimental items from trips? A, I have enough to fill a scrapbook. B, I have a few select items from over the years. C, I'm not really into that kind of stuff.
I think I'm a B.
Yeah, I'd say I'm a B on that too. All right. Do you know what it's like to feel mushy inside? Yes, I'm a mush ball, and I love that mushy feeling. I have my mushy moments. Not a pleasant feeling, nor one that I have often.
I'm a C.
Oh my God, really? You don't feel mushy?
I have mushy feelings when I'm falling in love with someone.
Man, I'm an A all the way. All right, do you and your partner have a special song together? Yes, I can tell you exactly what it is. B, there are songs that make me think of him or her, but nothing official. Not really. Some couples do that kind of thing.
I just want to play a song that I have for you.
All right. What's the answer though?
Okay. Tell me the.
A is like, yeah, and I know the song. B is there are songs that make me think of them, but there's nothing official. And then C, no.
Well, I'll play this and you tell me if you think this is official. This would be a song that I 100% think of you.
Oh, yeah. That's our official song for sure.
This song?
Yeah.
How much of it can I play? Not much?
No.
Okay.
That was our wedding
website song. Black Keys, Black Keys, Everlasting Light. It's a great song.
It's a good song.
Yeah.
Dan Auerbach's got a talent.
Yeah.
I'm going to go A, yes, and I can tell you exactly what it is.
Put me as a B.
B, okay. did I put mine down there? Hold on one second. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Would you call yourself a person who is a romantic? I am a romantic and I am proud of it. I would say I can be romantic, but I'm not sure that I am one. I would not describe myself that way.
I would not describe myself that way.
Okay. I guess after taking this, I would say A. I definitely am. Okay, so Bridie, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 C's.
Oh, God. I'm that person.
You might be that person. 7 C's. You have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 B's.
Oh, my God. Okay.
You're right on the fence. Walking the fine line. You're on the fence. And 1 A. 1 A. All right. I have 1 C. Oh, my God, dude. Oh, my God. What the fuck? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 B's. And then I guess it would be 6 A's. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 A's.
Yeah, you're a high B.
High B. If most of your answers are A, so if you've been doing this at home, if most of your answers are A, you are a person who tends towards romance and being romantic. You like the idea of love and the gestures and feelings that come with it. You make romantic experiences a priority and feel most fulfilled when you and your partner are creating those experiences. While very romantic people are passionate, creative, and often joyful, they can have moments where the fantasy of a situation leaves them disappointed. You are clearly the type of person that will seek out and create romantic experiences. Be careful to communicate your needs and desires and not be disappointed when your partner or the moment may not exactly be as romantic as you are. That's a good thing to consider. Keep in mind. If your answers are B, you have your romantic moments and allow yourself to feel and experience romance. You have been known to initiate romantic activities and would likely welcome a partner who enjoyed these types of gestures. You may make romance a priority during sentimental times, or perhaps you sprinkle little bits of it into various moments of your life. Ask yourself if you have the right balance in your life of romance and adjust the amount if you feel like it's lacking or a bit too much for your taste. That sounds exactly like me. I'm definitely like full on a B. If most of your answers are C, you are someone that either shies away from romance or avoids it altogether. While there is no rule book that says romance is a must do or must have, it is important for you to ask yourself if life this way is working for you. If both you and your partner are fine with this minimal amount of romance and your relationship is working well, then perhaps you want to leave things as they are. If you or your partner are finding that your relationship could use more romance, or if you believe that your lack of romance skills or feelings are impeding you from finding a relationship, then you might want to make more of an effort to step up your romantic game while still staying somewhat within your comfort zone. Find romantic gestures that work for your style.
Yeah, that's interesting because I don't think it works for my partners. Right. How little romanticness there is in me.
Right.
I do have to try a little bit.
You got to try a little harder.
But I try in ways that feel most natural to me. Mm. So for example, those sorts of gestures like the stop motion animation.
Yeah.
You know, I wrote a poem that I think is quite good for Todd. I've written poems for other lovers or potential lovers as well. So those things feel really natural in terms of romance.
The writing thing, yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me.
And you know, like going off to a cabin for the weekend is something that I think is a priority.
Yeah.
But I'm not a date. I don't, even in the, you know, even in my teenage years, watching things like She's All That and all of those sort of romantic comedies where candles and rose petals and things like that were used,
not unrealistic about it.
I'm not unrealistic. Yeah. No, it's funny because, I looked up aromantic. So basically while you're just reading that, I Googled, I'm not romantic. Is there something wrong with me? I found the word aromantic, but the word aromantic, according to WebMD, Sexual Health Division, aromantic people have little or no romantic attraction to others. They may or may not feel sexual attraction. An aromantic person can fall into one of two groups, aromantic sexual people or aromantic asexual people. So I guess I'm an aromantic sexual person because I'm not asexual.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Interesting. I wouldn't say you're aromantic. I would say that you are, because you did answer the same amount of B's as C's.
That's true.
You're just less romantic than I am.
Mm-hmm. And other partners.
I'm not a hopeless romantic.
Right.
I very much am a romantic.
Yeah.
Right. You are somewhat romantic.
I'm somewhat romantic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I think I can be a little bit romantic in the way that I like to, not right now for anyone watching us, Patreon, but I can be a bit of a romantic. I like to have a bit of a romantic wardrobe. Like I love, I don't know if you've ever, I will for the patrons take a picture of myself in my high school prom dress, which is essentially a medieval wedding dress. It is very romantic.
You should toss that up on the close friends Instagram.
Oh, good idea.
Story for all of our patrons that have sent us their Instagram handles and want to be a part of our close friends group, which is one of our new Patreon tiers. And again, if you want to watch the foreplay to this week's episode, you can go to patreon.com/Jeremyon. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we're chugging right along here. Do you want to go right into the conversation or did you have something you wanted to touch on?
Yeah, no, I'll save it for next week, what I have for next week. But before we do throw, I would like to thank the incredible folks who have signed up to become patrons since we last spoke. Thank you for making our podcast go round. We would not be doing this still without our patrons. It's just, and all, of course, all of the letters of support from our fans.
Yeah.
We love to hear from you.
Yeah, we do.
But this week, especially, we want to thank Maddie Britton, which I think is such a great name.
That is a great name.
Alicia, Kelsey, Ryan, Danielle, Amber, Taryn, and Marita, we love you. Thank you so much for showing up for us in this incredible way. And we've had a couple of folks reach out to who are interested in supporting us financially outside of Patreon, because of course, like any really helpful third party, Patreon does take a fee. And if that's you and you're just not willing to hand over your credit card information to a third party, or you want to just give us all of your money, then we will take that for sure by email
money
transfer. and I'll be making a list of people to thank with those who have given us that support for next week.
All right. Thank you. Let's jump right into our conversation. It was a really lovely chat with Ricardo. He is a photographer. His website is sexnotporn.com. And I'm going to let Ricardo do the talking. His whole thing is photographing people having very intimate moments with one another or with themselves. But he does not view his work as porn. Instead, he views it as art. And it was a very interesting conversation with somebody who is clearly an artist and is very passionate about the work that they do. And just had a lovely chat and really, really enjoyed this conversation. So we hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. For our patrons, we will see you later. And for everybody else, we will see you on the other side. Bridie, I'm gonna throw you in the deep end here. Give me a little background into what we're walking into today.
Well, to be honest, I got an email that just sounded really interesting, and when I clicked through to the website, it's Sex Not Porn. I was very intrigued by the photography there. So I said, absolutely, let's have a chat. And here we are sitting with, I love your last name, Scipio. So am I pronouncing it correctly?
You are pronouncing it correctly, and good job. Most people mispronounce it, so good job.
I love a good SC sound. So Ricardo Scipio, and I think we're going to be talking a little bit about some provocative photography.
Erotic photography? Is that, I mean, hey, sex, not porn. What do you call your photography, Ricardo?
I call it sexual art. I actually don't consider it erotic, although erotic's in the eye of the beholder. So some people might find it erotic, but that's sort of not, not the spirit that I did the work in.
Sure. Why? Why do you not see it as erotic? What does erotic mean to you? And what sets this, in your eyes, what sets this outside of the realm of erotic?
That's a controversial question. So
perfect. I'll give it right in the deep end right away. Let's do it.
And I'll give a controversial answer.
Perfect.
To me, just in my opinion, there's no such thing as erotic art. The two things don't go together. In my mind, eroticism are things that are made that are designed to arouse people.
Right.
And I don't believe art is made to arouse. I think art does a lot of things. It can help us, you know, compare and contrast and investigate and move through things that we are afraid of, move through things that haunt us, that obsess us, et cetera, et cetera. One person told me once something that sort of brought it home to me. If you're a painter and you're painting an apple, there might be millions of different reasons why you're painting an apple, but it's never going to be because you're trying to make somebody hungry. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
I like that.
So, Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not trying to disparage eroticism. It's had an important place in history and is important currently in the culture for sure. But it's just not my bent.
Yeah.
And that's one of the main differences, I think, between like what I do and porn, for example. In my work, if you look at my work, the people I photograph aren't looking at the camera. They're not playing to an audience. They're not trying to titillate you. They're not trying to engage you. They're in their own world. They're doing their thing. They're being themselves. And what they're being is unapologetic. And I think that's an important thing, because most of the time we apologize for being sexual in this in this culture. We live in a very sex negative culture and a sex negative country. So, you know, when people are sort of authentically being sexual, often, you know, there's an apology attached. Oh, sorry. I hope we're not offending anyone. I hope no children are watching. I hope the church doesn't get mad. I hope, you know, I hope the censors don't come down hard on us. I hope Facebook doesn't ban us, et cetera, et cetera.
It's my dog. Well, my dog also feels the same way.
Yeah. He's agreeing. Yeah.
Like, yes, me too. Fuck Facebook.
You've been a photographer for a long time.
Are you trying to say I'm old?
Well, I don't know how old you are. You know, timeless. You have a timeless look about you.
Good recovery.
But I assume that you've had a bit of a journey with your photographic career, because I read in your bio that you were at one point a fashion photographer. And I'm kind of curious about how those two things how one blended into the next, and what it was that sort of you were hungry for when you started out as a photographer, and if you feel like you're zeroing in on something, or if you're passing through this on your way to something else.
That's a great question. When I started off as a photographer, which is when I was 14, what I was hungry for is social contact. I was a very, very, very shy kid. And I found out if you had a camera, people were interested in you. If you had a party and you had a camera, people wanted you to photograph them. I found out that, you know, that pretty girls liked being photographed as a shy, you know, awkward teenager. That came in handy. When I was 14, I managed to get the most beautiful girl in our class to be my girlfriend because she was vain and she liked being photographed. So it worked. But I loved cameras and I loved photography. It seemed like magic. You know, you could, well, back in those days, I started with a Polaroid camera. And it was just magic, just seeing that image come to life right in front of your eyes. And then I went to art school, and when I got out of art school, the thing I was hungry for was survival. I was trying to make a living. I was like, as an artist, you know, what am I going to do? I was interested in painting, writing, and photography, and it didn't seem plausible that I was going to be able to make a living from painting or writing anytime in the near future. But I thought with photography, at some point, someone needs a photograph for something. Ooh. You know, I figured you could always get some sort of gig as a photographer. So I tried to get work. And the only work I could get at the time as a photographer was being a fashion photographer. I was lucky that I knew someone that knew someone at a modeling agency, and they took pity on me. And they basically let me photograph their models for free for like 6 months. And when they became satisfied with what I was doing, they started paying me for it. And that started me on a 10-year journey where I, you know, was traveling all over the place, you know, photographing models. And that was, you know, how I started as a photographer. And it was, you know, a very interesting time. Not only because I was 20, and when you're 20, everything's interesting. You're just emerging, into the world, and everything seems possible, and you feel invincible and all that good stuff. But also, ironically, it was it was the beginning and the middle of the AIDS epidemic. Ooh. And so, ironically, I was in this industry with so many young, creative, you know, vibrant people. And they were dropping dead like flies, you know, right in front of me. You know, three of my best friends, you know, went in a year and a half. And
oh my gosh.
Yeah, you know, in your early 20s, the last thing you're thinking about is death. Mm-hmm. And so it made me think more about life and about my choices. And I decided I wanted to do work that was less temporary and less superficial. I enjoyed being a fashion photographer, but no matter how good your fashion photos are, in 6 months, nobody's interested because the style has changed.
Right.
So it's very, you know, it's very temporary, which is one of the things I liked because it forced you to continually change your style and continually grow and challenge yourself. You can't just sort of sit on one style or one mode of photographing. But I wanted to do the opposite. I wanted to create images that wouldn't go out of style. And I figured nudes would never go out of style. They never have. I mean, nudes that were done in the time of the Greeks and the Romans are still interesting, you know, to us. And so I went the opposite. I started photographing fine art nudes in color, in natural landscapes, and that became the next part of my journey. From fashion photography.
Turn Me On Podcast will be back after this short break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When people, this is a bit of a weird question. I don't quite know how to phrase it, but how would you like people to describe the type of photography that you do? So some of the first words that obviously came to our mind were erotic and one of the first things that I thought was like, they're very like raw, like it feels like, almost voyeuristic, like a little bit like I'm in the room.
Fly on the wall.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. Just curious about...
No, that's a good question. I would be most comfortable with people describing it as either sexual art or intimate art. Mm. But it's kind of like having to invent the terms because there hasn't been a long tradition of, you know, this kind of work. Mm. So it's not like there's already established sort of vocabulary and descriptors for it. And I was having a big debate yesterday about this very subject because some people were saying that some porn is art and some art is porn. And, you know, what is it that I consider myself? My work, where does my work fit in that continuum and all that stuff? But for me, I consider myself a receiver. So when I go to photograph someone, whether they're nude or not, or having sex or not, I consider it my job to receive them the best way that I can. And that means sort of getting outside of myself a bit and not having it be all about me and all about me sort of enforcing my idea of how they should be photographed, but being a bit more receptive to sort of who they are and where they're coming from and where they're at the moment. And, you know, the more intimate the act is, the more sort of trust the subjects have to have in you and the more relaxed and open they need to be. So I have to sort of be very relaxed and open myself. Mm. So, I would consider it intimate art or sexual art.
I even like relaxed and open. There's something mm-hmm. about that seems fitting as a descriptor for the feeling that I feel when I look at your images. Would you take us through your process a little bit? Because these are incredibly intimate images. How do you reach the point of that kind of trust?
And also, how do you find folks willing to be so vulnerable and allow you into that space?
Well, finding the people is the biggest challenge. It's not easy for many reasons. As human beings, one of our biggest fears is being ridiculed by others, mm-hmm. especially our peers and family and people we work with and stuff like that. So there's been a negative history of sexual images being used to do revenge porn and, you know, harm people in different ways. So people are naturally, you know, skittish about that. Sometimes for no particularly good reason, sometimes it's just paranoia, but it's, you know, it's real. Also, people struggle with their body image, and it's not just women. I've found that men struggle just as much. Women get a lot of pressure in this society to look a certain way or, you know, represent themselves a certain way. But men get it too. And I've had men say, okay, well, let me go to the gym for 6 months and get a six pack first before let you photograph me. And I'm like, it's not about that. It's, you know, it's a body positive project. I love photographing people of all different shapes and sizes and colors and ages. And when you do see my books, there's a really great representation of larger people and people that are not what would be considered conventionally beautiful. So yeah, getting people is not easy. Fortunately, I've been photographing sex for 7 years, so you know I have a bit of a network. I do have contacts, so often people refer people that have photographed with me before will refer friends or acquaintances. And I also put casting notices up on the internet as well, so that's primarily how I get people. And as far as the process of actually making the work itself, I learned a lot by being a film director. I've written and directed three independent fictional feature films in my past. And, you know, the main job of a director is getting the actors ready. So you rehearse and you rehearse and you prepare. And if you do a good job, by the time you get on set and are filming, most of the hard work's already done. And it's similar with photography. I spent a lot of time before the shoot talking to people and helping them get ready for the shoot. And if you do a good job of that, there's a rapport that's already started, and people are already well on their way to being able to do what they need to do in front of the camera before the shoot even starts.
So you don't have necessarily, that's really cool. Do you like a choreography? You kind of, are you also just kind of observing the movement?
Yeah, I don't tell people what to do. I don't direct the shoots that way. That would be too much like porn.
Right.
Too performative. I move around and just sort of try and get good angles of what people are doing. Sometimes I will have to tell people to keep their chins up, because if people drop their chins down too much, that's not so good for the camera. Sometimes I'll have to ask people to get their hair out of their face. things happen when people are moving around. But the best shoots are the ones where I have to say the least. And, yeah. My models have written a lot of articles about what the shoots were like for them. And one of the repeating themes is, I forgot that he was there.
Right.
Which, is interesting. But me being sarcastic, I'll say, oh, am I that am I that insignificant? Am I, oh man, that easy to ignore.
looking at some of the photos, there is a real at least from looking at it, it seems like there's a real tangible intimacy, a quality of a very tangible intimacy with the models. Are you more often than not photographing real couples or people who already have an established relationship, or are you sometimes bringing together two models that have never met, and this is the first time that they're going to get their clothes off and explore one another's bodies?
Well, both happen. I always prefer to photograph people that are in real relationships.
Right.
It's great to tap into the dynamic that's already evolved between them. But sometimes it has been complete strangers. I don't like to sort of tell people who to shoot with. So most of the time people pick who they want to shoot with. But there have been times when people haven't had people to shoot with and said, is there anyone that you could match me with? But one of my best shoots was with two strangers that had never, you know, had sex before. They had met each other a couple of times, like sort of socially at parties or whatever, but they had had no previous physical relationship. And yeah, they got together specifically for the purpose of the shoot. And ironically, it was because the woman's boyfriend didn't want to participate, so she opted to participate with, you know, with another man. And it was amazing. I mean, the chemistry was intense, and there's something to be said about discovery, about the thrill of discovery, about touching a body for the first time, looking at someone for the first time, tasting them for the first time, feeling them for the first time. So yeah, so many of my best shoots have been with couples. I did a shoot with a couple that had been together since they were 15. And they were both 50 when I photographed them. Whoa. And I photographed someone that's been together, and they've only ever been with each other. They've never been with anybody else in their life. So to photograph that was, you know, quite amazing. Ooh. But also photographing these two people that were getting together for the first time was amazing as well.
And sorry, Brad, go for it.
I was just going to say, that'd be so interesting to see those in contrast to one another.
I can hook that up for you.
That'd be great.
I'm curious to know if just based off what you were saying there, like a couple that's been together since they were 15 and now they're in their 50s, are most of the people that you work with, is this type of thing, whether that be in the realm of just modeling, you know, with clothes on or modeling with clothes off, is this like something that a lot of the people that you work with are have partook in before, or do you sometimes have people showing up to a shoot that are like, I've never done anything like this, and this is very novel and new for me?
Almost no one that I've photographed have been people that have been frequently photographed. For most people, it's the first time being photographed by a professional photographer. In the era of smartphones, lots of people snap naughty pictures themselves.
Of course.
when they're doing their thing. But I would say 80% of the people that I've photographed have never been photographed by a professional photographer before. And a lot of them would never have done it if it hadn't been for my specific project. It's mostly newbies that I'm working with, which is great because they don't have pre-established sort of habits or pre-established poses or personas that they're doing in front of the camera.
Right. Like it almost eliminates the performance aspect right off the bat.
Yeah. You know, some people are naturally exhibitionist and you have to sort of, you know, try and tamp down that performative instinct. But yeah, for a lot of them, they're completely raw and new at it and scared. Yeah.
Can you have a number of volumes of photography that you have published? It seems, I think I read that you're on your 10th book. Can you tell me a little bit about the Goddess Project parts?
Sure.
1, 2, and 3, I think there are.
Sure. And there's even 2 pre-Goddess books. So when I made the transition from photography to fine art nudes, the first thing I did was I photographed black men and black women nude in color in natural landscapes. And that was a great healing journey for me because in my fashion photography career, I was rarely allowed to photograph black people. The magazines in Canada and the States, you know, this is back in, you know, the 80s and early 90s, late 80s, early 90s. And they told me things like if we put a black woman on the cover, we'd go bankrupt, which which was ridiculous, but that was, you know, that was the reality at the time. And I remember one Canadian magazine allowed me to photograph a black woman, this beautiful Jamaican woman, and they made me put her in a platinum blonde wig, and they made me put blue tinted contact lenses on her. And wow. I was so pissed off. They wanted to like erase her blackness as much as possible. Having been starved of being able to photograph my own people, I wanted to really dive into that. So I spent a few years only photographing black men and black women, and had 14 gallery shows of that work. And that was sort of like the pre-goddess work. And then I started photographing women of all different colors and shapes and sizes and ages, and that was the goddess project. And I did three books of that work from 2002 to 2014. And it was interesting and fun for me, because I really truly do love photographing people of all ages and sizes and colors and gender identities and sexualities. So I love diversity. So that was a very, very super diverse project. But a weird thing happened when I was shooting book two. I was photographing a 70-year-old woman in Washington State, a sculptor. And we were shooting in the forest, as I usually did. And in the middle of the shoot, without warning or without us discussing it, she started masturbating. And she gave herself like this big orgasm. And I didn't know what to do, so I just kept shooting. And we didn't talk about it afterwards. We never even mentioned it. And I just thought it was a weird, random thing. So I didn't really, think about it too much. And then it happened again shortly afterwards with a 53-year-old. And I was just like, okay, this is weird on a few different levels. First of all, why aren't any of the 20-year-olds or 30-year-olds or 40-year-olds doing it? and why now? So I started talking to some of my people, and they made me aware of the fact that they wanted to express more of their sexuality, but that I wouldn't let them do it because, I was keeping my work non-sexual because I didn't want to compare it to porn. And I felt bad about that. I felt like, okay, I'm censoring people, I'm holding people back, I'm being an obstacle to people expressing themselves, and that didn't feel good. So I did an experiment in book three of The Goddess Project where I made it a book about self-pleasure. So I photographed women and trans persons masturbating. And it was challenging and exciting for me as a photographer because I had to shoot it quite differently than shooting nudes, different cameras, different lights, different angles, just everything. There was nothing the same. There's nothing similar. So it was great to shake myself up that way. Mm. And it was just also emotionally challenging and interesting because it required a deeper level of commitment on my part. And afterwards I talked to the people and they said that, they enjoyed having more room to express their sexuality, but they still felt constricted because I didn't allow them to work with partners. And so I said, okay, the next book, you can shoot by yourself or you can shoot with, a partner or two partners, whatever you want. And that's how the Goddess Project became the Sex Goddess Project. Next thing I know, I wake up and I'm a sex photographer all of a sudden.
Right.
The thing I didn't want to do, I'm now in the realm of porn.
What a fascinating evolution. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah. What struck me about what you're just saying is like, you're an artist and you have, as an artist, you have your expression, and then you have these people coming in and saying that they want to express as models. So how do you navigate that as the one who's sort of in control of the image? Like, what is the balance of their expression and your expression? Is that something that you have to wrestle with very much?
I wrestle with it all the time. And I wrestled with it when I was in art school. When I was at NESCAD, my photography professor was a Marxist-Leninist. And he spent probably as much time talking about Marxist-Leninism as he did about photography.
They do that, don't and, they?
Yes. And, you know, him and I had a, him and I had a big screaming match in class about it one time. But some of the stuff that he talked about stuck with me. And he was talking about how artists shouldn't just be masturbatory, shouldn't just be like, you know, jerking themselves off on their work, that they should be trying to serve like a bigger purpose if possible. Mm. If, you know, if they're inclined that way, if they're called that way. And, you know, he was talking about how important art was in everybody's lives and in how underrated that importance is. And I, you know, I thought about it, and growing up, my heroes were artists like Bob Marley and, you know, George Orwell and Van Gogh and different things. And I thought, yeah, I mean, art is important. Every single day of my life is enriched, you know, by artists. And, you know, I think when Bob Marley was writing his songs, he wasn't just writing them for himself. He, you know, he was writing them for the people. He was, he had a message, you know, that was beyond himself. I think that's been true for a lot of artists. I think when Shakespeare, you know, was writing his plays, he was thinking about the human condition and all the many ways that that we struggle with, you know, being a human being on this earth, and how we struggle with power, how we struggle with desire, how we struggle with violence, how we struggle with love, how we struggle with a lot of things. And I just thought, okay, you know, how can I make my work be more than just about me and my own particular hangups and my own particular comfort zone? If I'm asking all these people to go outside of their comfort zone, you know, how willing, you know, am I to go outside of mine? And so it became about that. It became about, you know, what's the bigger picture? And to me, the bigger picture is we live in a society where we're still so conflicted about the most important and most beautiful thing in life, which is sex. I mean, the bottom line is none of us would be here without sex.
Yeah.
That plant behind you wouldn't be there without plants having sex. Sex is what, you know, makes the world go around. And it's a time when it's done, you know, when it's done in the right way, according to me. It's a time where we can take off our clothes and let down our defenses and, you know, relax our inhibitions and be a bit more free than we can be when we're clothed and in the world and, you know, and sort of being non-sexual. And I think that's why it's driven so much human behavior. I mean, look at what we do for sex. look at what we've always done for sex. We've done great and horrible things in the name of sex because it's a powerful thing. So this powerful, beautiful thing we're so immature about and so conflicted about in this society. And I thought that's the bigger picture. The bigger picture is, as I say in my slogan, that sex is too important to leave in the hands of pornographers. Pornographers can't be the only people that are, you know, talking about sex in the art, you know, in the area of images, in the area of the visual. So I sort of, you know, I guess I became a bit Marxist-Leninist in my
in my artwork. I feel like you're sort of touching on it there in what you said, but maybe I'll just ask this just to see if there's a bit of a different answer. But in the work that you've inevitably found yourself, you know, immersed in, how has this at all changed your relationship to sex, your own personal relationship to sex?
It's changed it quite a bit. I'm 56 years old. I've been having sex for 41 years. I was a fashion photographer. I've traveled different places. I've had lots of sex, and I thought that I knew a lot about sex. And in starting this project, starting the Sex Goddess project, I realized I knew almost nothing. Ooh. I was so naive, such a newbie to the world that's out there. There's just so much. There's so much diversity of sexual expression, sexual identity, sexual dynamics. And I'm pretty sure after, 7 years and 4 books and photographing 503 people, I'm sure I haven't even scratched the surface of, of the world of sex. So it's opened my eyes and my mind quite a bit. I was able to be comfortable photographing things that would have traumatized me greatly before embarking on this particular journey. And I will say I've seen some things that I wish I could unsee, but it's definitely made me a much more open, more tolerant person. And I'm looking forward to becoming even more open and more tolerant. That being said, sadly, it's also been very difficult for my own personal life. I've lost 3 of my last 4 girlfriends because of the project. It's not easy. It's not the easiest thing in the world necessarily to date if you're a sex photographer. It's not like something that people are looking to see on someone's profile on a dating site or something like that. There are consequences, and you just get a lot of flack and a lot of pushback from social media, from the government, from all kinds of different sources. And in fact, sometimes I think my life would be easier if I was an outlaw biker than being a sex photographer. I think if I was a Hell's Angel, I would get less pushback than being an intimate artist.
You've just sparked a wild idea for your next book, I think, which is some sort of Hell's Angel sex photography.
Yeah, totally. There you go.
It just writes itself,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Can you, I'm wondering if you could bring us sort of back to your origin story in terms of what were your influences as a young person that you mentioned some artists and whatnot, but were your parents or any of your guardians or like real present influences, did they open any of these doors in your mind about sexuality and expression of that kind, or were you like a lot of us where it was just kind of like, no, don't ask. You'll learn it from someone else when you're older.
Well, the simple answer is hell no. I grew up in a born again Christian household. My mom is still a very staunch pro Donald Trump Christian. One of the things that happened to me is when I was 10 years old, I found a stack of Playboy magazines thrown out on the corner. Someone had just sort of tied them up with string and just left them on the corner with a stack of newspapers. And it was a stack of Playboys that must have been like 2 feet tall.
That's a gold mine.
So my friend and I found it, and we had like a little clubhouse, and we took it back to our clubhouse, and we just spent days looking at this, and it was very traumatizing. I was not ready to be aroused that way. It kind of, was mind blowing. And I wish I hadn't found them, but I did find them. So that, alerted me that there was a world out there that I knew nothing about. And it wasn't just the photos. I read the articles, and it was always about all these flight attendants flying all over the world and having all this wild sex and, you know, all this kind of stuff. This would have been 1975. So, you know, it was a swinging world back then. And so that, I think, started, you know, the process. It made me, I think, aware of, on a level that I couldn't process till much later, how powerful sexual images were and still are. They're very, very powerful. And if used cynically, they can be quite damaging to people. Mm. So yeah, that would be my first introduction. But no, my mom never talked to me about sex. When I was 14, she left a book on my bed called What Every Young Man Should Know About Sex. But I already knew everything that was in the book by the time I was 14. But, you know, God bless her, she did at least leave me a book. But a year earlier I'd found my own book, which was called The Joy of Sex. I don't know if you guys remember that book. And that was a much more healthy thing to discover than the Playboy magazines. Yeah, I mean, it had Kama Sutra poses in it and stuff like that. It was like, okay, there's a whole world out there that is exciting.
It's remarkable to me how many 10-year-old boys stumbled upon stacks of Playboy magazines somewhere. We've had this conversation with so many people who are like, oh yeah, a pile in the woods, a pile in my dad, under my dad's bed, a pile. Yeah. I'm like, I never saw, but I did find The Joy of Sex in the library in my house, which is weird because other than to produce children, I don't believe my dad and stepmother ever had sex. So,
wow, well, that book was popular. Everyone sort of had that book,
And those images are still with me. Those are the first sort of sexual images that I stumbled across, and absolutely they impacted me, and probably. You know, I won't use the word traumatized, but definitely, at least set up some like shook me up. Couldn't ask anybody about it.
Yeah, right.
Wasn't going to get any clarification from anyone. Anytime I asked anything, it was always, you know, you're too young to know that. You'll find out later. And too often that means that, you know, that young people stumble into situations they're not ready to be able to effectively handle. So, but it's just so wild that there's almost always the joy of sex and there's almost always a stack of Playboys in everyone's origin story.
Yeah, it's very common. Ricardo, what do you have? What do you have on the go now? What's the next project for you? What are you looking forward to?
Well, I finished the Sex Goddess project. I finished it last November, and I've started my new project, which is called the Intimacy Project. So I am, my focus now is not sex, it's intimacy. That's not to say that people aren't having sex in the intimacy project. They don't have to, but most of them are. But it's about intimacy. It's about, you know, people deeply connecting and being vulnerable and open and soft. And it's much more, over the four books, I started more and more focusing on people's faces and focusing on the way that people look at each other and the way that people touch each other and the sort of the inside jokes that they tell each other in the middle of it all. And that's, you know, what I find interesting at this point in my journey. And that, you know, that is sort of the journey from fashion to nudes, from nudes to sex, and now from sex to intimacy. And I know what the next, you know, phase is going to be too, but I'm not there yet. But I'm looking forward to doing several books about intimacy. And ironically, it's even harder to find people to photograph for intimacy because people that are okay, you know, being photographed fucking, aren't necessarily okay about people seeing them in a very vulnerable, open, loving, connected sort of space. And for some people, that's not how they have sex. It's, you know, the way they have sex is different on a, you know, might have more of a dominant and submissive kind of flavor, might be more primal and animalistic and, you mm-hmm. know, whatever. And it's all good. I'm creating books with the loving, deep connection happening, the intimacy.
Mm. Wonderful. Yeah,
that is fascinating.
Very exciting.
I love the idea that you can capture chemistry in a still photograph.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How can people find your work? How can people stay up to date with what you're up to?
The best two places are sexnotporn.com and also intimateartproject.com. The sexnot art sort of covers all of sort of my sexual work, the Sex Goddess Project, the Intimate Art Project, but also I've started releasing NFTs of my work. I've got a series called the Love Drops series where I'm releasing NFTs of loving photographs of people kissing and being in a loving space. So all of that's on a lot of introduction, all of that's on Sex Not Porn. And specifically, a more in-depth look at the Intimate Art Project, the Intimacy Project, is on intimateartproject.com. Those would be the two best places.
And are you still looking for models? And how do people find you if they want to be featured or mm-hmm. a subject in your project?
Yeah, there's links to volunteer to model on those sites. Also links for people to go to my events if they want to go to some of my events and to, you know, inquire about seeing more of the work. I put very little of my work on the internet. So what's on my site is just a very, very small taste. And I don't put my more explicit images on my website. I obviously don't want to overexpose my people in an irresponsible way. If people want to see more of the work, they can come to an event. I have both online and in-person events, but they can also just request to see more of the work, and I will, you know, make an appointment with them online or in person to show them more of the work. Can volunteer to be photographed or volunteer to help the project in some other way through those sites.
Very cool.
And by the way, if I will be in Nova Scotia for a month, so if you guys want to come and shoot, don't be shy. I'm ready. I'm ready for you.
We are due for some new promotional photos.
That's true. That is true.
I could promote you in a whole new way.
Yeah, that's it. That is it.
I stripped down. I got naked for one photo shoot, and it honestly was life changing. As a woman in my 30s, with all kinds of hangups about getting my photo taken, it was surprisingly much more comfortable as my clothes came off. Because I think, and I've said this, like our audience has heard this before, but clothes, hair, makeup, I've never felt really confident in like putting those elements together on me and then like, you know, be like, that's right, this is me. So taking all of that away was like, ooh. Oh no, this is me. This is far more comfortable. And mm-hmm. whatever you capture is the real deal because I can't hide behind anything.
Yeah. It can't be any more real than this.
Yeah, there's nothing to hide behind. Yeah, I find that's mostly what happens with my models. 90% of the time, they're really nervous and lots of things are going through their heads before the shoot. And within 5 minutes into it, that sort of all melts away. Ooh. And they, you know, they become comfortable in their own skin. And sometimes my biggest problem is trying to get people to put their clothes back on.
Yeah, right.
I've had to beg people. I've had to say, okay, I've got enough photos. And they're like, oh, no, I got another idea. Okay, we didn't try this or we didn't try that. I'm like, oh, I got to go.
Like, I'm dehydrated. I haven't eaten in 7 hours.
Yeah. Well, it's not only that. I'm 6'3", and some of the angles I have to put myself in to get the shot are really hard on my back. My back is so sore after shoots. I have to contort myself sometimes to get these angles. And I'm like begging for mercy. Please, can we finish the shoot?
That's so funny. Amazing. Yeah.
Well, Thank you so much this for has sharing been really nice.
This has been really fun to chat with you.
No, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you guys. And just remember, I'm in Nova Scotia for a month.
Yeah, you hear that, friends?
Hopefully we'll see you while you're here. All right, that was our conversation with Ricardo, and I hope you enjoyed that. That is it for this week. For the folks listening at home, if you are tuning in on Apple Podcasts, leave a rating and review. If you're listening from Spotify, hit the follow button. All that shit goes to help. So if you don't feel like you want to support via Patreon, you can definitely do that. If you want to support us on Patreon, again, like we say time and time again, www.patreon.com/turnmeon. And lots of great perks there. And again, we're just like coming right up to basically our last episode of season two.
Next week?
We have three episodes left. We have two after today. Do we not?
We said that next week was going to be our last one. I could be wrong on my number count, but
I think you are wrong because we have the conversation with the Pussypedia folks, and we have that really, really awesome conversation that we were saving for our last episode. Or did I fuck that up?
No, you're 100% right, but this is episode 199. So next week is episode 200. So we will have
a tough call episodes
to make, but do know which one we're going to release.
Oh, I see.
And the other one is in the vault for our patrons who are the only ones getting an episode August.
My bad.
Thank you again to our patrons who are supporting us taking August to produce our season 3.
Is there only one more week left to July?
Yeah.
Fuck my pussy. Oh my God, the summer's almost over.
I know.
Ugh.
I know.
Just got sad again.
Don't say that because we only get 8 weeks of summer. It's not
right.
almost over.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
But we are,
Global warming.
We're a third of the way
through. Summer, the global warming.
This is the hottest summer I've
summer
ever felt
last
in my life.
We're not going to have a winter this year.
That's true. We might just keep going.
We might just scald into the end of December. All right, folks. Well, then there you have it. This is next week. It'll be our last episode of the fucking season. That's fucking crazy.
Our
3.5 year season. It was a long one. But listen, if you're not aware, don't fret. We're only taking a month off. We will be gone for August, except for our patrons. You get a bonus episode, and we'll be coming back in September with lots of fun shit in the pipeline. So that is it for this week. Until next week.
Go touch yourself.
Hold up. What was that?
Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.